Welcome to Turkey Crossing, everyone. This is Paul Bogish, and thank you for stopping by to hang out with me while we talk about how to get our kids to solve problems, collaborate, create, innovate, dialogue, and get their imaginations cranking, all while using Classroom 2.0 tools and not forgetting that the most important thing in the world is not an online connection, but a teacher-student connection. So relax, close your eyes, unless you're driving, eating, or skydiving, and open your mind for another edition of Turkey Crossing. Good morning, everyone. This is Paul Bogish, and thank you for tuning in to the podcast that I call Turkey Crossing. It's been a while since I have released a podcast. School has started again, and I've noticed with at least all the podcasts that I subscribe to that about 3 weeks or so ago, the number that I've been downloading into my iTunes has slowed down dramatically. I guess as everyone started school, it's kind of hard to do both. But what I'm going to try to do this week is at least do three or four. That's my goal, because I've had these things, I've actually stopped and wrote them down on a piece of paper. And before I forget what I wanted to talk about, maybe jam a few of them out this week. One of the things I struggled with this summer is, should I take Turkey Crossing out of the ed tech category of educational podcasts? If you're cruising iTunes or cruising Podomatic, you might have clicked on that educational technology tab and found me in that category. And if you've listened to any of these, probably wondering what the heck I'm doing in that category. When I started this originally, I was going to kind of record my struggles and starting off with all the wikis and blogs and podcasts in my classroom. And of course, summer hit, and ended up talking about things other than that. But I think after I have this podcast and a couple others, then I'm going to go right back and really focus on that part of my teaching life, because my kids have just all opened up their own blog and we've all gotten onto our wiki, and I think our first podcast is going to be tomorrow. I'd really like to document that and share with people all the struggles we've had this year in getting started, and all the joys as well. But for this podcast, what I want to do, I'm going to try to do this real fast, is I want to talk to you about my first day of school. I've been teaching for 17 years, and over the course of that 17 years, I've slowly changed what I do on the first day of school. And now it's pretty much the same thing every year, and that's kind of rare. There's not a lot of things that I carry over from year to year. But what I do on the first day of school is pretty much the same. And I will say that sometimes our schedule is a bit funky and we have these really short classes. So what I'm going to talk about on this podcast might actually end up being, you know, day one and day two. Kind of unique, and I haven't found anybody else that does something similar to this, so let me share it with you. Very first thing I do is I want to always give the kids a different experience when they walk into my class for the first time. I don't want them to walk in and say, same old, same old. I want to automatically catch them off guard, automatically make them start thinking about what they're experiencing and what they're hearing and what they're seeing. And so from the second you walk into my room, it's not really like any of the other rooms. I have, I don't use the overhead fluorescent lights. I have two lights that are, I don't know what you call them, but you know, they're like pole lights that shoot the light upwards. So whatever you call those. And they're in both corners of my room. And so you have this neat kind of soft light that illuminates the corners, you know, like both sides of the walls shoot up to the ceiling and bouncing off the ceiling. I have, I guess what you would traditionally call Christmas lights, those little lights like you'd wrap around a tree, except, you know, separation of school and state. So we call them spirit lights. And those are strung around the top of the ceiling along the wall, all the way around the room, making a circle around the room. And those are on, providing a neat little soft light. And, you know, there's a bunch of other little funky things that you notice when you first come into my room. Everything from the wind chimes that are hanging out the window to, I'll stop right there. So when the kids walk into the room, I make a seating chart for the first day. And again, I'm not big on choosing seats, but I am big on learning names, and so I do have them sit in there in a chair. And I hand it to them as they walk in, so we don't take any time during class, and I'm not saying, you know, you sit there, and who's this and who's that. And just as my own little quirk, I always put what I consider the most interesting name sitting right in front of me. And even if it's like the name of an ex-favorite student or something like that, I don't know, for some reason it just helps me start off a little more positive. And so they all walk into the room. They got their seat and chart. They all sit down. Everybody's got that, you know, nervous first day sort of thing going, and nobody's talking, and everyone's looking at me to start leading the class. And I immediately open with a story of something that just recently happened. I try to pick something that happened, you know, either the day before or, you know, the day before that. And it's always a really oddball story. Something in which any human being would go, holy cow, what's he talking about? And this year I opened up with a story about right before school started. And I won't give you the whole story because it's kind of gross, but I have a small farm and I have a guard dog that lives there on the farm, outside with the animals full time. And let's just say somehow he got a cut on his back. Somehow a fly landed there, and somehow he became infested with maggots. And it was just a horrible experience cleaning him up. It took a lot of hard work. There was times where I did not think he was going to make it, did not think I was going to make it. And we all struggled through and survived just fine. And without going into it, there's always some kind of little moral within the story that I will reconnect to later in the year. But for the beginning, they just think I'm a kook telling this interesting story about my life. And so immediately the first thing they experience is me opening up and sharing something about some problem that I had and exposing a little bit of myself, while, you know, the story itself, whatever the topic is, really catches them off guard. Now, at this point, there's been no major introduction. There's no class rules. There's none of that stuff. Next thing I do, now I'm sitting on a stool, by the way, in the center of the room. Again, the lighting is very soft. I normally, at this point, just have the spirit lights on. And I take out a book. And before I read the book, I do tell the kids, you know, what the spirit lights, the name of the spirit lights, and we call them spirit lights. And whenever the lights are on, they represent that something deep is going to occur in class. So that if they walk in and they see them glowing, they know that whatever, we're going to go deeper. And usually, whatever they're about to hear, there's some deeper message to it. And so as I take out the next book, I tell them, you know, this book can be listened to on many different levels. But remember, the spirit lights are on, so listen for a deeper meaning in a way that you've never listened before. I start reading the story, and their eyeballs start bulging out because It's the story of the three little pigs. Like, what the heck is this guy doing? He tells us a story about a dog and maggots, and now he's reading the three little pigs. And every time I say the word wolf, they have to, each person in line has to make the sound of a wolf. That's also in there. And what's interesting to me is that I do that because I get a good read just on each kid on day one, just by the sound of the wolf that they make. You know, the kid who's incredibly bashful is just a small little, you know, oof. The kid who has a lot of spirit and spunk is the one that goes, ooh. And the class clown will inevitably go, moo. So it gives me a good read into each kid on day one. And anyway, so we read the three pigs, and we go over the symbolic meaning of it. You know, why would I read you this on the first day of school? And inevitably, the kids get everything from, you know, this is the beginning of our school year. We're starting off, and we get to decide how we're going to make our own year. You know, we could skip doing all of our homework and not study. That's the equivalent of building with straw houses. Or we could work real hard, do all of our homework, come back for the extra help in whatever subject. And that's the equivalent of the brick house. And once you build that brick house, nobody can tear it down. And you can probably see where I'm going with that. A lot of kids will also pull up things like don't buckle under peer pressure. And that sort of thing, you know, stay strong in the face of bullies, and that sort of thing. And you can get a lot out of that book. And then I take out another book, and at this point, they're with me. And they're still in shock, you can see on their faces. And it's one of my favorite books. It's called Gerald the Giraffe. And I think it's just a super book. And it's another kid's book. It's about a giraffe who lives in Africa, and every year there's a dance, and all the animals come, and Gerald comes, and everyone laughs at him because he's horrible at dancing. And on his way home one day, there's a cricket that meets Gerald, and he starts playing a song. And Gerald starts dancing, and he ends up being the most incredible dancer there ever was. Other animals start gathering around, and like, holy cow, Gerald, where'd you learn how to dance? We never knew you had it in you. And he says, you know, everybody can dance if they find music that they love. And we're done with that book, and again, the question comes up, why would I read you this book on the first day of school? And what we get out of that is that everybody, we call it the cricket all year long, and everybody's got a cricket in their heart. And I pound on my chest. And it's too often we listen to that cricket in our head that tells us we can't do it, or, you know, I have a great idea, but I'm just going to sit here quietly, or, you know what, Mr. Bogus just gave this assignment. I could see a better way of doing it, but I'm not going to say anything. And we talk about how we've got to release and listen to our cricket. We've got to follow our heart and spirit. And how, and I tell the kids this could be dangerous in other classes, but you know, that if we're doing something in class that you know you don't like, and your cricket is telling you, oh my God, this is boring, that I need to hear the cricket. That if you are getting up and you're doing a project and your cricket tells you to do it one way and I'm telling you to do it another way, let's hear that cricket. Let's get it done the other way and experiment and try. And to me, that's the most important book, and I don't know if I did a really good job explaining it right there, how it's used in class. But throughout the year, we'll do these cricket exercises where you get the kids comfortable in class and speaking out. And you know, there's one thing about, it's one thing to be a kid who could speak out in class, and I guess there's another. And what I try to do is to teach them to speak up. You know, lots of kids can just give an answer and or stand in front of the room and whatever the project is, but the ability to speak up for what you believe in and what you believe is right and to try to make a difference is more important. And almost always, I would say almost, probably almost close to 100% of the time, if a kid comes up to me and says, I'd like to do something this way, your way is just not cutting it, I will say yes. Anyway, and then the last book that we read is a book that most of you have probably heard of, and that is The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein. And just in case there's somebody out there that doesn't know the premise of this book, it's about a boy who comes to a tree and he plays, the tree is moving, what's the word I'm looking for? It's probably some language arts term here, you know, the tree is like alive in the sense of it could interact with humans. I don't know what that, whatever that word is. But this little boy comes to a tree and he, you know, plays with the tree and picks the apples and plays hide and seek and that sort of thing. And the boy gets older, and slowly but surely the boy no longer comes to the tree until once again he is an old man. And he slowly takes things from the tree until the tree is down to just a stump. And the end of the book basically closes with, you know, I may have nothing left to give, but you can come and just sit and be happy with me, you know, sit on the stump. And we talk about how my class is, I'd like it to be the symbolic stump for them, that I will give and give and give as much as I can all year, that they are free to take and take and take and take and give nothing back, or they are free to come and sit on the stump and, you know, talk to me. That goes for whether it's an academic subject or whether it's personal, but the stump is always here, and that they have the choice of either taking me up on that offer or not. And at the beginning of the year, you know, it's symbolic in the sense that they can do that throughout the year. And then at the end of the year, it serves its symbolic purpose by saying that they can come back at any time, just like the boy did in the book. And so that's basically my first day. It's interesting, I think, how there is a group of kids every year in which all they do is hear three stories. And there is no message behind them. Well, you know what? I take that back. I think the Three Pigs book is an obvious one. Everybody gets that. You know, the building the house, starting a new year, they get that one. The Gerald the Giraffe book, I think that there are some kids that it takes a little while, as we're talking about crickets and expressing yourself. It might take a little bit for some kids to understand. In The Giving Tree, I'm convinced, I think there's some kids that are only going to get that at the end of the year. And it will take a while. But that's what I've come up with over 17 years. I've had lots of kids come back to me and talk about that lesson plan. And there's even been a kid who wrote a college essay about it, an entrance essay. So I know it's hit some kids right where I planned on hitting them. And again, there's no rules. You know, I'm not going over classroom rules. There's no real big personal introductions, whether it's me to them or them to me. But what it does is it sets a tone for the year that's, I think, soft and meaningful and deep and caring and warm and all-inclusive. And, you know, the books really show that what we're going to do in here is worth doing. I think that's the subtle message that comes out. And that everything that we're going to do is going to be deep and worth it and not just some superficial factual junk. So, you know what? I can feel myself wanting to go on and babble a little bit more about it because there is a lot of a deeper meaning behind that first day of school, and everything has been well thought out and picked purposely to really hit the kids in their heart and not their heads, and to totally suck them in. And I can go through, you know, how that makes that one class sets them up to be curious, and that one class sets them up to want to come back the next day, and then not. Today, I'm going to stop right there. So hey, thank you very much for, if you've made it this far, for listening to another episode of Turkey Crossing. And as always, if you've made it this far, feel free to come back to that computer and leave me a comment, would you? All right, bye-bye, and thanks again.